morning and welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Giada. Feel free to engage in this discussion, 877-300-7645. There was a comment, and tomorrow I'm sure we're going to review more of what Ahmadinejad had to say. Tomorrow I would expect us also to review what the President of the United States had to say at the United Nations regarding the Muslim reaction to the film. But there was a comment in the BBC coverage of the speech that suggests that this president said that we should constrain intolerance, that intolerance was somehow the foe. Well, I have a question for the president. Should he have said that? How can you be intolerant of the violent Islamic reaction if you're opposed to intolerance? If being intolerant is the problem, where do you draw the line? Is someone who is intolerant of your presidency, where you have made grave mistakes as it relates to America's financial security, its economic recovery, its hopes as it relates to renewable energy, it's by continuing to leave Americans in Afghanistan to die for nothing? Should we be intolerant of your stupidity? Is that inappropriate, Mr. President? If you're intolerant of Mr. Romney and the Republican agenda, are you violating your own rule? Is it inappropriate to be intolerant of America's military adventurism? Are we just condemning, Mr. President, intolerance of that which you don't like? Who is setting the standard? And how can you use intolerance as the standard? You know, there was a march at the University of Virginia 4 or 5 years ago, and the big slogan that was repeated by these students, this is one of the most prestigious public institutions in the United States and even in the world. And the numbskulls that were marching at the University of Virginia said, we're intolerant of intolerance. Well, if your mantra is you must be tolerant, then how can you be intolerant of intolerance? We live in a completely irrational world. The goal of those who would aggrandize themselves, who seek power, wealth, and money, is to control by controlling what can be said. Exposing the truth, condemning religion and politics and militarism, will be considered hate speech. It will be banned. The world will move toward eliminating one's ability to speak honestly about Islam, about Muhammad, about the cause of terrorism in the world. 99.9% of terrorism in the world is perpetrated by fundamentalist Muslims. It will ban such discussion. Because it will say, hey, you know, if it hadn't been for that movie, those Muslims wouldn't have been rioting. Oh, yes, they would. They'd found another reason. And when you blame the movie as opposed to the religion, then all you are certain to get is more of it. When you are tolerant of evil, when you are tolerant of corruption, when you're tolerant of lies, then you are being merciless to the victims. Yahweh's Torah has been criticized by lots of people for a very long time because it is intolerant. It tells us that we should not tolerate religion, that we should not tolerate national politics, that we should not tolerate patriotism, that we should not tolerate militarism. It says that we should not tolerate lies. We should not tolerate false gods. We should not tolerate deceptions because of their consequence. That the most merciful thing we could possibly do is to be intolerant of those things. Think about that. when you hear your politicians speak out in favor of tolerance. Non-inflammatory words, as if we just all talked nice to each other, if we embraced, if we supported, if we pretended like Muhammad was really a good guy, that he wasn't a sexual pervert, that he wasn't a mass-murdering terrorist, that he wasn't a disgusting liar, that if we just talked nice, that it would be okay, that those victims of this religion, they wouldn't want to destroy Israel. They wouldn't want to kill and eliminate every Jew. They wouldn't want to fly planes into our buildings if we just talked nice to them. Last time I checked, there was a fellow named Neville Chamberlain. He achieved peace in our time. He decided if I just go and meet with Adolf Hitler and talk nice to him, if I give him what he wants, then we'll have peace. And what happened? 55 million people died over the next 20 years. If, and I shouldn't even say if, because most people are going to remain ignorant, because they will remain irrational, politicians around the world and religious leaders working with them, the media in cahoots with them, are going to continue to lie to people. They're going to speak of intolerance as being the great crime, being judgmental as being the great sin. And as a result of that, they are going to continue to satiate the desires of the most uncivilized people on earth, particularly Muslims. They're going to give Muslims what they want, Israel. They're going to carve out the West Bank and hand it to them. I've already carved out Gaza and given it to them on a silver platter. They will sacrifice Israel to achieve peace, to satiate what they crave. Give them what they want and they'll stop attacking us. Be the same catalyst that led to World War II. As a result of those actions, and that's not my opinion, that's exactly what Yah says is going to happen. As a result of that course, and we'll have no one to blame but ourselves, but as a result, we will engage and light the flame for World War III. But unfortunately, this time the weapons are vastly more deadly. We become much better at killing and destroying. And this time, 55 million people are going to look like one day, the carnage of a single day. The world's going to kill over 3 billion people this time because we will be tolerant of, we will speak favorably of Muhammad and Islam as Muhammad's followers, those he has poisoned with Satan's inspiration, continue to be ever more enraged. The more impoverished they become, the more their religious and political leaders will say, the reason that you're impoverished is the United States, death to the United States, death to Israel. And we will satiate, accommodate, tolerate to the point where they're empowered. They will sense an empowerment and a freedom to avenge their rage. And it's going to begin World War III. And according to Yahweh, who has never been wrong about anything he has ever predicted, half the world's population is going to die because too few people are willing to listen to him. Now, we're not going to make that same mistake. We're going to turn right now to his opening testimony in his Torah, in the book of Bereshith, in a volume of books called Teaching. We find Bereshith's opening comments. Bereshith means in the beginning. The Torah means teaching. In the beginning, Bereshith, the Almighty Elohim, created Bara and was alongside Eth and closely associated with the spiritual world, Shamaim, and the material realm, Eretz. And in the natural and physical world, it existed formless, orderless, and as an empty void, obscured in darkness along with the presence of this great commotion, of mysterious energy, a big bang. The Almighty's Ruach spirit hovered over ministered to, and cleansed according to the presence of the waters. Now, we were talking about this in a program not too long ago, at the end of last week, and we spoke specifically about how Ruach is a feminine noun. It is the manifestation of Yah's power from Ruach, which means that which can be accepted and makes one acceptable. It's a tangible expression which delights, aids in perception and understanding, and is a feminine aspect of God's nature that brings relief, renewal, restoration, and life. So the Almighty's Ruach hovered over, ministered to, and cleansed according to the presence of the waters. Now, spirit and purification are well-developed aspects of salvation and eternal life, but so is water. For example, in Revelation, we find two of many such affirmations. This from Revelation 21, 6 and 7. I will bestow a gift to one who thirsts, longing for that which refreshes the soul from the spring of the water of life, as a gift freely, without cost. And then 22:1, he showed me a river of the water of life, crystal clear, coming from the throne of God and from the Lamb. Hosea, which we have corrupted to Hosea, similar, but with Hosea we don't understand the basis of the word, which is Yasha, which means salvation. The basis of Yahusha's name, the one who spoke these words to Yahuchanan in Revelation. Hosea equates these living waters with Yahusha as well. His words from 13:15. The Spirit of Yahweh will ascend out of the wilderness. His source of life, his basis for purification, are equivalent to his cistern of mercy, his source of blessings, a well of sustenance, and a fountain of life. We'll return to this message, and notice that Larry has called in after the break. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Before we dive back into Yah's testimony on this specific topic, which is to equate Yah's spirit with the process of purification, it's one of the most important roles the set-apart spirit plays in the lives of God's children. We have Larry on the phone. Larry, as many of you know, did a wonderful job of hosting the program yesterday. Hello, Larry. How are you?
Oh, I'm okay. You know, I mean, it's debatable whether I did a wonderful job. I think I was a little nervous and tried a little too hard, to be honest with you, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, just straight off, that's what I listened to it. I listened to it afterwards, and I really kind of worked too hard at that, you know.
Let me tell you just a secret here, Larry. I have listened to, and I've, you know, between Yada Yada Radio, and the some 3,000 hours of national syndicated radio shows that I've done, and now this program. I have listened to tiny parts of probably two or three of all of those. So now, collectively, we're probably 10,000 hours of shows. I've listened to tiny parts of two and three because I just am so irritated by how poorly I think I do. You know, you're always so disappointed. Should have said this, could have said this better. And so if you listened and you were underwhelmed by how it sounded, then welcome to the club. Just don't worry about it. The bottom line is that if we're willing to share the unpopular truth that Yah has exposed to us, and if we're just willing to act as a conduit, as a friend to those who are open to the truth, who are willing to listen, who are interested in God, who are interested in knowing why the world is just so bad, why so much awful stuff is happening, and why there just appears to be no hope in the rhetoric of men, then we just make ourselves available to share God's answers to those questions.
That's not an appearance. There is no hope. There's no hope in the rhetoric of people, but that's not why I called in. I'm reading here off FB in a group called I'm Not a Christian, which was established by a guy named Michael, who's in Unpopular, Michael Howe. And I'm reading here off Quora 16:29-31.
Uh-huh.
And my first thought here is I'm reading a couple of religious copy edits. This is what it says, and you tell me. This is to be an everlasting ordinance to you. On the 10th of the 7th month, so we're talking about Kippurim, you must deny yourself.
Yeah.
And do not any work, whether native or alien, living among you, because on this day of atonement will be made for you to cleanse you then before Yahweh, and you will be clean from all your sins. It is a Sabbath of rest, and you must deny yourself.
Yeah.
It is a lasting ordinance, and he's got this as Korah or Leviticus 16:29-31.
Right. Yeah.
Now, what's your take there?
Okay, well, we are on the cusp of celebrating Yom Kippurim. Yom Kippurim, properly translated, is the Day of Reconciliations, the YM ending to Kippur. Kippur is to reconcile, and therefore Kippurim is reconciliations. Yom is the Hebrew word for day. So it's the Day of Reconciliations.
So it's not a day of affliction, then?
Well, if you would think that the appropriate way to reconcile a relationship is to afflict yourself, then you're having a relationship with a very dark and demented, sadistic spirit. If God said, what I want you to do to reconcile your relationship with me is abuse yourself, then that's not a God that I would want to have a relationship with. Just think about being part of that God's family and spending eternity with him, and he thinks that the way to reconcile our relationship is to abuse ourselves, to deny ourselves. Now, last time I checked, the covenant had five promises. The five promises of the covenant are eternal life. Is that being deprived of life or being given life?
I'd be given life.
Okay. The second benefit of the covenant is to be perfected, to be made. Because right now, I'm going to tell you, I can't speak for you. I can speak for me. I'm flawed. So being perfected seems to me like that would be a benefit. How about to you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But I want to speak for myself. I'm perfect.
Okay, good.
I'm just kidding.
The third aspect of the covenant is to be adopted into God's family. Is that being denied? Or if you're an orphan, would you want to be adopted, and particularly adopted into the covenant? We'll return to this discussion after the break. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. We're on the phone now with Larry. Oh, we're not on the phone with Larry. I don't know why Larry was somehow cut off. Let me speak to the issue, though, that Larry raised. What he was citing is a horrible corruption of Yah's Torah testimony. It's found in the heart of the Torah in a book that is named Korah. We've shifted the name of the book to Leviticus as if it were a book to the Levites. There is no V in Hebrew, so there cannot be a Levite. And the word is spelled with a waw, which means that they are the Lowi. Lowi means uniters. The Lowi were a group of people that God said, you know, I want someone to help explain my teaching to my people. I realize that everybody is not going to be literate. I realize I've used a lot of symbolism to help you understand the nature of the relationship that I'm offering you. And therefore, I want a group of people who cannot be enriched. You cannot own land. You can't be in business. I'm not going to allow anybody to pay you any money. It'll be your privilege to be able to serve me in this way. Serve with me, actually, in this way. That's the lowy. So if you have a priest or a pastor that is being paid for the job, they're not representing God. They're not doing what he asked. If they own property, then they're not following God's teaching on who gets to minister on his behalf. God made it certain that this privilege of serving him would have no monetary earthly reward. Has no power, has no authority, has no privileges associated with it other than just the thrill of being able to work with God. And so this book is presents the symbolism and the path from our polluted and corrupt world to God's perfect home. We were talking about the benefits of the covenant and how they were wholly opposed to this notion of us abusing ourselves, of us depriving ourselves, of us denying ourselves. It is all about God enriching us. In fact, the fourth and fifth benefits of the covenant is that God does enrich us and he empowers us after adopting us, after perfecting us, after making us immortal. The whole purpose of reconciling the relationship, which is the covenant, is so that we receive these five blessings. This notion that we can reconcile the relationship by doing exactly the opposite of depriving ourselves of all of these benefits is, well, there's a biblical term for it, stupid. It's erroneous. When Larry was reading that passage, there was ordinance, for example. God has prescriptions. He has teaching. Prescriptions for living. Typically, the word that is twisted to become an ordinance is choke, chuka. It's an interesting Hebrew word with a very interesting root. It speaks as so many of Yah's terms about cutting, about separating. And through this process of cutting and separating, actually inscribing, which is to write testimony down so that it can be passed on for generations as uncorrupted as possible. So that it's one's commitment, one's signature, one's mark. And a choke is actually a prescription that's inscribed on how one should live their life. It's not an ordinance, something that needs to be obeyed. It's a prescription on how we should live our lives. And I'm going to share with you what the testimony of Kara actually says regarding this celebration of Yom Kippurim, which starts this Wednesday evening at sundown. It is amongst the most important invitations that God offers us. It's one that very few people understand. Let's listen. Kara, which we've corrupted to Leviticus. Kara means called out. Then Yahweh declared the word to Moshe, saying, on the 10th of the 7th month, Kodesh, time of renewal, is the day of reconciliations, Yom Kippurim, the day of pardons and forgiveness. Now, why would one abuse themselves if the day is about being pardoned, if the day is about being forgiven, if the nature of this day was about reconciling a relationship with God? This exists, Haya, this was, is, and will always be a set apart and cleansing. This is from Kodesh. Kodesh is one of those words that is so essential for us to understand. Kodesh speaks of being set apart so that we're set apart from the world so we can be set apart unto God. The spirit that we were speaking of at the beginning of this segment of the program is the Ruach Kodesh, the spirit that is set apart. So this was, is, and will always be a set apart and cleansing called out invitation, mikra, a meeting, a time for reading and reciting from kara, which means to be called out, to proclaim, to welcome, to meet, and to encounter. So the very nature of this event comes to us by way of an invitation. How many times are you invited to abuse yourself in a loving relationship? No, this is a party. It is a celebration of our relationship with God. It is an invitation. You're not being denied an invitation. God Himself is offering you this invitation to be reconciled in your relationship with Him. This was, is, and will always be Haya, the basis of Yah's name, a set apart and cleansing, called out invitation to meet for you. For you. It is for you. For our benefit. It's not for God. It's for us. This invitation to reconcile the relationship is for us. And then he says, and your soul. That's the essence of our persona, our very nature, that mortal gift of life that we were given, our unique character. And your soul shall respond and answer. This is from Ana. Ana somehow has been corrupted to afflict. Ana's primary meaning is to respond. Its secondary meaning is to answer. It is to reply. It is to make a declaration. It's to engage in thought. It's to vocally communicate one's response. And your soul shall respond and answer, not afflict itself. Open your lexicons. Open your Hebrew dictionaries. Look at what Ana means. And your soul shall respond and answer. Answer what? The invitation, the mikra. And your soul shall respond and answer. The mikra, the called out invitation to meet. Appearing before and approaching. This is from Karab. Drawing near. Coming to be present with. The feminine manifestation of God's light. Isha. Isha is the Hebrew word for fire. Just as God appeared as a fire at the top of Mount Horeb. As he was the pillar of fire that led the children of Israel from the crucible of Egypt into the promised land. Just as God communicates his nature, saying to us that if you want to understand his spiritual nature, come to understand the nature of light. For the feminine manifestation of that light is the Isha. The very spirit that we were speaking of at the beginning of this program, the Ruach Kodesh, is the feminine manifestation of God's light. It says, so your soul shall respond and answer this invitation to be called out, to meet together, to be welcomed, appearing before and approaching the feminine manifestation of God's light. To approach Yahweh. Why to approach Yahweh? This is La Yahweh. La is a preposition that speaks of moving toward. To approach Yahweh. You see, the next step in this journey from our polluted world to God's home is sukkah, shelters, where we get to camp out with God. We want to camp out with Him. We have to approach Him. How do we approach Him? Reconciled in the relationship, adorned by the Spirit's garment of light, by answering His invitations to meet with Him. Respond and answer these invitations, and you too can appear before God's light and enter His presence. That's what it says. That's consistent with who God is. It is absolutely in total accord with His covenant and its promises. It goes on to say, do not perform any of the service of the heavenly messenger on this life-sustaining and empowering day. Lo Asha, don't profit from, don't engage in any of the malaka. What is malaka? Well, malak is one of the most commonly used nouns in the Hebrew Torah, prophets, and Psalms. Malak means messenger. It is a spiritual envoy. The very people that we misname angels, no, they're not angels. They're malak, according to Yah. The malak are God's spiritual messengers. They have the task of conveying God's work, His nature, His plans, His message. They are spiritual messengers. They say, you know, on this day where I want you to come into my presence, where I'm inviting you to come in my presence, where I want you to respond and appear at this party, at this meeting time, I don't want you to be performing the job that I myself have volunteered to do. I have volunteered and have already now suffered as the Passover lamb. I have already had my soul go to the place of separation to make you perfect, to cleanse your soul. I have already adopted you into my family. I have empowered you. I have enriched you. Those are my jobs. That's what I am doing as your dad. Don't try to do my job. Don't try to save yourself. Simply respond to the invitation and come into my presence on this life-sustaining and empowering, this very substantive, invigorating, healing, and essential day. We'll return to Yom Kippurim after the break. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Is Shattering Myths. We're now shattering the myths of bogus translations of Yah's testimony. Those who are religious would have you believe that God wants us to reconcile our relationship with Him by abusing our souls. The testimony that He actually spoke to Moshe that has been conveyed to us is that He offered us an invitation, a mikra, to meet with Him, and that He is asking us, inviting us, to respond to it and to come into His presence. That's the truth. He then goes on to say that on this particular day, doesn't want us to try to save ourselves. He doesn't want us to perform the work that He Himself has done through the most important of all of the heavenly messengers, Yahusha. He calls this a life-sustaining and empowering day. It's a nishim, a very essential day. That should be devastating if you're a Christian, because you don't celebrate it. You don't observe it. You don't respond to this invitation. God goes on to say, indeed, key, because this is the day of reconciliation, Yom Kippurim, a day of pardons and forgiveness. For you to be pardoned and forgiven, Kippur, He has now defined the day. Kippur is the root of Kippurim, the singular root of Kippurim. A day of reconciliation, a day to be released from guilt, a day to have all of one's offenses annulled, to be forgiven, to be viewed as perfect and innocent. In the presence, la panay, of Yahweh, your God. That's the purpose of this day. It is the life sustaining and essential day, indeed, the one and only day of reconciliations for you to be pardoned and forgiven in the presence of Yahweh. So why? It's on this day. It's the day before, the time before, the last invitation to be called out, to meet with God, and to camp out with Him forever It's the sixth of the seven steps that collectively provide the path out of this troubled world into God's home. Now, he's explained the offer that he is giving us, and now he's going to tell you the consequence of ignoring this invitation, as every Muslim, every religious Jew, every Christian, every secular humanist on the planet ignores this day. They do not respond to God's invitation to enter his presence. And therefore, he says, because any soul who by way of the relationship does not respond to the summons and does not answer on this life-sustaining and empowering day, this essential day, this one and only day, they shall be cut off and separated from the family. Karat. Karat is the term that established the covenant. They shall be karat, cut off and separated from the family. Whose family? God's family, the covenant family. And any soul who by association performs any of the business of the heavenly messenger on this life-sustaining and empowering day, that soul I will annihilate. I will cause to vanish and be exterminated. Perishing, ceasing to exist. God didn't say, I'm sending that soul to hell. Doesn't say I'm punishing the soul. But the vast majority of human souls, if they do not respond and answer God's offer, they do not embrace what he is offering, they don't walk to him and enter his presence along the path that he has provided, they simply cease to exist. You were given the three gifts of mortal life, free will, and a conscience to be judgmental, to be able to make a rational decision as how to respond to these invitations that God has given us. If you choose to ignore him, if you choose to oppose him, understand that your soul will simply cease to exist. He then goes on to say that he does not want us to perform any part of the business of the heavenly messenger on this day. And that this is a clearly communicated prescription, an instruction which is cut into stone regarding this relationship for all time and for every generation and all of your assemblies and dwelling places forever. This is God's truth, his testimony. May Yah bless the understanding of his word. I am Yada, shattering this.
Time to get the best quality water filters and the best quality storable foods from one company? You bet it would, and now you can at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com.